सुदेवसुतं कंसचानुरमन्तं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं.
सो वी कंटिन्यू स्टडीइंग द 13th चैप्टर. And I'm sure you remember the important points we started, that there are only two things in this world, I and everything else. And all that everything else can be again classified into three: the body, the mind, and everything else. And everything else is a field. It's not mere. Reflects whatever is in front of it. That's why it is called Dharma Kshetra. That is why nothing wrong ever goes in this world. It is perfect. The Brahma Jnanis, no, it's a Brahman, say this world is perfect as it is. Even from a worldly point of view, it is perfect because it is created in that way. And if we are suffering, then it is due to what? Our own karma. If we are enjoying also, it is on due to our own karma. This is the most important doctrine in Vedanta, also in every other religion. Even in English they say, you reap as you sow. This is the simple truth. The whole science is based upon this invariable relationship between the cause and the effect. We create the cause and we reap the result. Now, I also said that since these three components are there, body, mind and everything else, we have to sit and forge or cultivate these fields. A field is there to be cultivated. If we do not cultivate. I also said, what did I say? If you do something, you get, if you do something good, good result will come. If you do something bad, bad result will come. And if you do not do anything, inevitably suffering will come. A student in a school, one morning, marched to her teacher and said, "Teacher, is it right to punish someone for not doing anything?" The teacher was horrified and said, "Of course not. Thank you, madam. I didn't do my homework." In Vedanta, there is a very technical word. Bhagavad Gita itself uses it. It is called pratyavaya. Not to do what we are supposed to do is a sinful action. And what are we supposed to do? We are all what is called prime for evolution. If we do not cooperate, then what happens? We will be sliding down. There is no question of lying in a neutral ground. Either you go up or you go down. You will see that if you do not make attempts to go up, then very soon you will be going down. This is the absolute truth expressed in the most pithy manner in English language. An idle brain is devil's workshop. Do you see how wonderful it is? Idle brain means what?
Nothing doing.
As though the person doesn't want to win, just wants to sit. No, it is going to be very, very counterproductive. So a field is there and it is there only to be cultivated by the cultivator. And we, each one of us, individually, we are the cultivators. I also mentioned, even though they said there is only one cultivator, even though the fields are almost infinite. But when it comes to human beings, we will say, I am both the field and also the cultivator. But that's a mistake, because you can, how can you distinguish between one field and the other? By forms, by qualities, by colors, by sizes, by names, etc. Names, of course, is later on to distinguish. A name is given to distinguish one object from the other. How do you distinguish? There must be some difference. Only by that we distinguish. Qualitative difference, color difference, size difference, quality difference, whatever difference, quality, quantity, everything. Jati, guna, kriya, sambandha, all these are the means to distinguish one from the other, is what I said. Because your cultivatorship, which is consciousness, and my cultivatorship, which is also consciousness, everybody's cultivatorship, which is also consciousness. What difference can you distinguish between one consciousness and another consciousness? Absolutely, there is no difference. Electricity is the same, whether it is behind your heating machine, or your motor, or the bulb here, or a magnetic power. You only distinguish, oh, here it is lighting up, there it is heating up, the other place it is moving some emission, etc. But the electricity itself, you can never distinguish it. Light itself, you can never distinguish. Therefore, it is a mistake to think that my consciousness is different from your consciousness. But to clinch this, so that we can understand better, what did I say? Even though you may be a cultivator yourself, but as far as I am concerned, I perceive you also as an object. I do not know who you are. I only know who I think you are. You are nothing but an idea, an information, a shadow, digital information in my mind. And this digital information we pass on from one to the other. This is called backbiting. Go on passing. No, such and such a one postmortem. Is it so? I am not going to tell anybody. You won't tell the, to the other person and say, don't tell anybody. This is what the condition by which from, I have learnt the secret. That person goes and tells. Until again, that person, the last person comes to you. Yeah. Anyway, there is only one, all that we know is what our mind tells us. And our mind is influenced by how we cultivate. That's an important point. Suppose you are a farmer and you sow bitter gourd. What is the fruit you get?
Bitter.
And will you be influenced by eating that bitter gourd or not?
Yes.
We are the eaters of the results of our own karma in the form of sukha and dukkha. No use complaining to anybody. Even if the whole world wants to help you, it's a mistake, it will never do, but if it wants to help, even if it gives you in money or medications or anything, but how we perceive those objects determines the quantum or quality of our happiness. A person, a king, a prince, an emperor could be very unhappy. A beggar could be very happy. There is a popular story, I think I told you. There was a king who was very unhappy. So he wanted to be happy. So he found out that if he can get the clothes of the most happy person, then he would be happy. So he went, he sent in search of the happiest person. After 6 months they returned. Then the king asked, did you find the happiest person? Yes, king. And did you bring his clothes? No, king. Why did you not bring?
He has no clothes.
This is the truth. So happiness is not something you can buy, borrow, or steal, or digital copy. There is one thing, you can never do it. You will have to produce yourself. So also unhappiness. Now, so we have been given this opportunity. We are here, the three fields are there, and we have to cultivate them. Cultivation requires a very special type of relationship. It is a most wonderful psychological law. That is, we only see others. We become like mirrors for others. We see others how? As we are. That's all. If I am a thief, there is a Vedantic classical example given. So, it was evening, almost dark. So one person was going. Suddenly he saw something looked like a person or whatever. So immediately this fellow, he said, maybe a police is waiting to catch me. And he ran away. So who was he?
Thief.
He was a thief. Because he was a thief, he was mistaking that object as a policeman. So another person few seconds later came. He said, "Bah, how great I am. At least I am able to walk. This fellow simply stoned." That was his judgment. Who was he?
He was a
drunkard. At least I am able to walk. But this fellow is completely stoned. And after some time, another person, he said, "What a great saint. He is absolutely still in the highest samadhi." Who was he?
Saint.
He was a saint. So you see, even though we see the same object, but how we interpret that object, good or bad, friend or enemy, desirable or undesirable, doesn't depend upon the outside. So you may dress as you like. You may go to most beautiful beauty parlor and spend lot of money. But it depends upon the other person, how that person perceives. This fact has been so humorously illustrated by Dale Carnegie. How to make friends and influence people. Suppose a young lady wants to catch a fish. So she dresses very nicely, goes to the river, and dangles and says, "Fishy, look at me, how beautiful I am." Do you think fish will care? If you want to catch a fish, then you have to give the right type of bait. It is not interested in you. Yeah. There is a lot of truth in it. So, what is the point? We think we can influence others. No, unless they want to be influenced, they cannot be influenced. Each one of our perceptions is different. Some people thought Sri Ramakrishna was mad. Some people thought he was just an ordinary sadhaka. You know, that's why he used to ask, "What do you think I am? What is your opinion about me?" He is not soliciting your opinion. He is testing to find out how far have you progressed. Some use it to say you are an ordinary sadhu or sadhaka. That means they could understand him only that much. Some people used to say, "You are a realized soul." Then he used to understand, "Oh, they progressed." And some people used to say, "You are an incarnation of God." And then he used to understand, they are of high character. And one devotee said, "Sir, those who call you an incarnation of God, he belongs to a low class." I said, "How come?" He was surprised. "What? Some people are calling me incarnation of God and you say they belong to low class. What do you think about me?" He said, "You are that source from which incarnations emanate." Sri Ramakrishna was highly pleased. No, I think it was maybe Narayana or Purna. I think Narayana. Yes.
Even Girish Ghosh said that.
Girish Ghosh never said. No, he said you are an incarnation of God. Later on, it took quite some time. He had his own doubts. Yes, that was almost the end. But in the beginning, he said, "But this person in the evening at dusk, and all lights are burning, and he is asking, is it evening? You know, for this pretense, and he ran away from that place, you know?" Yeah. So many events happened. But at the point where we are illustrating, that we never perceive any object exactly in the same manner. Sri Ramakrishna's own illustration is, a woman, young woman is passing. Same person, but different perceptions. A small child runs and says, "Mommy," and embraces. And a old man is going, says, "This is my daughter." Another person is going, "This is my wife." Like that, same object, but entirely different perceptions. So, the point I am illustrating is, we know only what our mind is. That's all. Because it is through the filter of the mind, our information is presented to us. The sense organs present they pass correct information. But how we interpret that information, then again first it passes through the filter of the sense organs. And then it passes through the filter of the mind. The mind consists of various, what is called, filters. Filters. You know, moods we call them sometimes. Different types of filters. One type, if a person is feeling low, then he interprets things in one way. If he is very happy, then he interprets it in entirely another way. And then there are samskaras. What type of desires we have. For example, if you are not hungry and if you are presented some food, it won't be attractive to you. But when you are hungry, that very same food will be very attractive. See how much time to time, place to place, situation to situation, we are interpreting and reinterpreting everything. Of course, most of the time, we have to lead our life. So more or less, we have some fixed filters. But at all times there are special filters. The point is that everything depends upon our mind. Now comes a very important psychological one. Now, why do we interpret? What is this field supposed to yield to us? For ordinary people, every field means every person, our body, our mind, and everything outside. Has only, we are only searching for one thing. You know that.
Happiness.
Happiness. How much this object, you know, when a person says how beautiful you are looking, what he means is, how much happiness can I squeeze from you? I am putting it in a most raw way. We are all sugar cane eaters. What eaters?
Sugar.
Okay. You understand what I am talking about?
Squeeze.
The moment the juice is gone inside,
and throw it.
Out we throw. When I put it that way, you don't feel very happy. But that is the fact. Fact of life, whether you eat food, even if it is poison, even if it is something wonderful, everything it only depends upon how much happiness it gives us. The saddest thing I feel, you know, when Hindu ladies go through marriage ceremony, the particular dress, all these glass pieces and all, I don't know, glass pieces, what a wedding, costliest dress, 10,000 rupees, 20,000, how many times a year?
Once.
After that it is gone. Because they become very wise after that. Hopefully, I don't know. Yeah. Hopefully they become wise. They become wise because even if they remarry, that dress they won't use. Sometimes they use it for their daughter's wedding or something like that. But in the point we are discussing, that everything depends upon what type of mind we possess. Now, that is a very important point, because how much happiness we squeeze from the fields doesn't depend upon the field. You see the point? Because the field is exactly the same. If Sri Ramakrishna is the same, some people consider him as a madcap, some people as a sadhaka, some people as a saint, some people as an incarnation. It is the same object.
Mm-hmm.
But where is the effect? The effect is upon the beholder. What does that teach us? That if my filter is a most wonderful filter, from the same object I can squeeze the highest bliss. And all the time, not once. Now this wonderful truth, if you recollect, Swami Vivekananda met Robert Ingersoll. And they had a conversation. And then Swamiji asked, what is your idea, philosophy in life? And he said very frankly, to squeeze as much juice as possible from this orange called the world. What was Swami Vivekananda's reply? He said, I know a magic by which I can squeeze full juice from the same orange again and again and again as many times, it becomes an akshaya patra. Why?
Because
if you
why?
Say God, God is nothing
infinite
but ananda,
source.
Eternal.
Not only that, I'm talking from psychological point of view. Why? Because just imagine there is a tumbler of water. And you are thirsty, you drink that water. As soon as you empty the tumbler becomes empty. But suppose you have connected a pipe to a huge lake. You can drink as many times as you want, as much as you want, it will never become empty because it is connected to the infinite. Now look, any object is like a pipe. Every field is like a pipe. Why do I say that? Because everything is only an expression of Satchidananda with nama and rupa. But if we do not see the Satchidananda, it is as though we blocked it. And what little is expressing, the moment we squeeze it, that object becomes like fruit. You know, sugar cane.
Pulp,
that's the word, sugar cane pulp. After that, you don't get anything. But if it is connected, if you see God, then it is behind it, there is an infinite source from which we can draw. So now you see, we are supposed to cultivate. But the first point, briefly we discussed yesterday, what are we supposed to cultivate?
Divine
qualities. There is only one thing. We want to cultivate the fruit called God. Four fruits I said, three fruits in the beginning, but ultimately one fruit. There is a beautiful incident in the Ramayana, and there is a beautiful song written by Purandar Dasa. Ravana was not being killed. He became what you call immortal, unkillable. Then Rama was wondering, why is he not dying, even though I am discharging? Because there is an Amrita Bhanda, a pot of nectar. And until that is taken away, nobody can kill him. So he was guarding it, he was putting it. When he comes to the battlefield, cut off one head, another head will come. So even Rama was unable to kill him. Somebody told him, you just get separate him from that nectar pot, and afterwards he can be killed very easily. So he sends Hanuman, and Hanuman goes, he knows straight he goes, and then he catches hold of the pot where it was very secretly, security password protected, password protected, and then, but he steals. When he was about to go away, Mandodari sees him. In Kathamruta it comes, that song also comes. Mandodari, she understands, if the monkey takes away this pot, then her husband will be assured to die, he will not survive. Then she wants to tempt him, because you know, monkey can be tempted with fruits, any fruits. So, she offers so many fruits. Then on that occasion, I don't remember the Bengali song, Amar ki phale obhav, I sit under the tree of Rama Kalpataru Mooladali Kulitidini. Yava phala beku enage. Beautiful song. Yava phala beku enage. It's a beautiful, I'll find out later on if it is there. So he says, do you think you can tempt me with these useless fruits? I sit under the tree called Sri Rama, which yields abundantly all the four fruits. Mangalate ase, Ramprasad, I am on
Bedali.
Kali Kalpataru Tule, Chari
Phal
Kudai Phal. It is the same meaning, that there are four fruits. God is the, what is called, embodiment of all the fruits. You can have as many times as you really want. So, Hanuman doesn't listen. He comes. This is what we are discussing. That if we can get that one fruit, if we can sit under the tree called Sri Rama, Sri Krishna, or Parabrahma, then nothing in this world can ever tempt. How can we cultivate that tree which yields us abundantly all the four fruits? That is the only purpose of life. Ultimately it means, if we can cultivate God, we would not lack for anything. Sat, Chit and Ananda, we become eternal, we become God. This is the idea. This is what we have to cultivate. Now, this is the first point. Second point is, then how can we make that field? Is that, what is that field? There is a law. What is the law? You cannot grow mangoes in Cedar Rapids. You cannot grow coconuts in Cedar Rapids.
Yeah.
But if you go to Florida, other places, you can grow abundantly. That means what? Every place has its limitation. And then also time, space, you know, in winter season, here nothing survives. Time restriction, space or soil restriction, so many restrictions are there. But can you find a place which is beyond all these restrictions? That means you can grow anything you want, at any time you want, in any way you want. Is there such a thing? Every field has that potentiality. So, what is that potentiality? It is nothing but God Himself. So, every field has got five elements in it. Every field, I said, every person, every object has got five. We discussed. What are those five?
Ananda,
Nama, Rupa. If you forget Sat, Chit and Ananda and only focus on Nama, Rupa, they will impose their restrictions. But if you ignore Nama, Rupa and cultivate Sat, Chit, Ananda, then that every field will give us exactly the same fruit, which is God, which is Brahma. This is our problem. So, what is the point now? The second point, every field is nothing but Satchidananda, covered with the dress of Nama Rupa. So, what should be?
We have to go beyond the Nama Rupa.
Beyond Nama Rupa. That is the second point. Every field is covered with Nama Rupa, but in its true nature it is Sat, Chit, Ananda. It is the second point. The third point, even more important, every object, as we mentioned, has got five elements. What are those five?
Sat, Chit, Ananda,
Nama, and Rupa. Now let us modify it a little bit. No, every object doesn't have five elements. It has only three elements. Sat, Chit, and Ananda. Where are the other two elements?
In the mind.
They are in front of me, these two. That is why Sri Ramakrishna is the super special eye specialist. Yes, we know that. If you have eye problems, you go to ophthalmologist. What does he prescribe? Eye drops. Drops in the eye. If you go to Sri Ramakrishna, what does he prescribe?
Drops.
Exactly the same thing. He doesn't prescribe drops in the eye. He prescribes drop the eye.
Wow!
That eye is called Nama and Rupa. So, what is the important point here? Even though it appears every object has got five elements, no, it has only
three.
Just let us say goodbye. You are taking the mic?
Yes,
please. Yeah. Very good, Arundhati. Let's see. Nama Rupa is an illusion or illusion not existing in the object but existing in ourselves. Therefore, if we want to remove Nama Rupa, no use going on beating any object. Because we only have to make effort to remove these filters. You can say, I produces, Ahankara produces Nama Rupa. In fact, Ahankara is the only thing. Another name for Ahankara is Nama and Rupa. Ahankara is nothing but Nama and Rupa. Let us find out. There is nothing wrong with aham, because aham is nothing but sat, chit, ananda. It is the kara. Kara in Telugu? Lonka.
Oh,
hot. It is this kara, which is the root cause of all our problems. Nothing wrong with aham, because your aham, my aham, there is absolutely no difference. It is the kara which produces, not a small kara, you are a big kara, and red kara, and yellow kara, all these kara. That is why it is called ahankara and mamakara. Somehow we have to get rid of this kara, means our identity with our body and mind. We also mentioned yesterday night that our own mind is the only problem. There is no problem with God, there is no problem with the world, all the problem is with our mind. If it is Sri Ramakrishna's mind, it is the same world, but it doesn't produce any bondage. But it, on the contrary, becomes a source of infinite joy. So we have to remove our filters. Our whole spiritual practice is to remove what has become an unwanted encrustation. The illustration given, Vedantic illustration or Advaita Vedic illustration is, imagine there is a sculptor. Imagine there is a block of stone and he wants to make, they say, Krishna out of that. What does he do? Does he make Krishna or does he remove all that is not Krishna or Rama? Any form. He just chisels away all that is extraneous to Rama or Krishna or whatever, because it is already there. It is the same thing with a potter making a pot out of clay. So even the potter doesn't create Nama Rupa. It is already there. he brings it to manifestation. You see the point now? So ahankara means that as though it is covered in different ways. If one way is that it is covered with panchakosha, another way is it is covered with three shariras. So sthula, sukshma and karanasya. Whatever you say, it is all, we are all talking about kara. Remove the nama and rupa. How can we remove? To remove that, we need certain special type of implements. Special type of implements. We need very gross, big instrument. We need a little finer, subtler implement, and we need subtlest implement. So, what is that grossest implement that is called karma yoga? What is this? Still lesser and more finer and more subtler instrument, bhakti yoga. And what is the finest instrument? Jnana yoga. How beautifully our Vedantic scriptures are telling us the means. So how do we do this? So every chapter practically in the Gita, it gives us these guidance. That is to say, develop certain wonderful qualities. What do these qualities, the development of qualities do? They don't make Krishna or Rama.
Right.
What do they do?
They
you know, first of all, you have to chip away with the biggest blocks.
Yeah.
For that, karma yoga is necessary. What is karma yoga? Doing our duties perfectly, but offering two things. One is, first of all, do the duties to the best of one's ability. That is the first part of karma yoga. The second part of karma yoga is offer the results to
God.
This is the second part. That makes up what we call karma yoga. Then we come to bhakti yoga. What does bhakti yoga do? It chips away, chisels away the subtler layers. What are the subtler layers in this case? In karma yoga, still we have desires. That is why we have duties. Desires and duties, they are closely related. If we do not have desires, we have also no duties. So in bhakti yoga, how to purify, gather, focus and direct all our desires towards God. That is called bhakti yoga. Is it Bhagavad Gita? Vishayendriya priti icha tare bole kham. Krishnendriya, no, Atmendriya priti icha tare bole kham. Krishnendriya priti icha bhore prem.
Now,
it's exactly the same thing. All desires, there is nothing wrong with the desire. In fact, if a person doesn't have desire, he's a dead fellow. Dead as the doormat, as they say. We must have desires. Not only we must have more and more desires should be there. But if those desires are towards temporary, limited type of happiness, that is called worldliness. But if the same desires are directed towards Krishna, there it is called prema. That is why, you know, Swami Vivekananda in his Bhakti Yoga lectures, he says, he starts with quoting Prahlada's prayer. What is that? Oh Lord, all the worldly people have tremendous attachment towards worldly objects. May I have the same attachment and attraction, but towards you. That is called prema. What is the difference between prema and kama?
attachment to worldly objects.
Kama means, see, if you are directing your desires towards the worldly objects, but no, objects are same, worldliness, for your own enjoyment, then it is called kama. But if the same desires are directed towards God, it becomes prema. Now everything you do, but for the sake of the Lord. Now we are doing all to please ourselves. But later on we do everything to please the Divine Lord. That is called Bhakti. Atma Indriya Kriti Icha Dari Naam Kaam. Krishna Indriya Kriti Icha Dore Prem Naam. This is a wonderful thing to understand. There's nothing wrong with the world. Nothing wrong with having desires. But where, in which direction, for what purpose you are using them. So, in Bhakti Yoga, we try to gather, purify and direct all our desires towards
God.
That is Bhakti Yoga. As we go on doing the subtle types of avarana, means the coverings, slowly fall away. More and more God becomes revealed. But now we have to take with the subtlest type of instruments. What is it? Jnana. Whether you are a devotee, whether you are a yogi, whether you are a karma yogi, whether you are a raja yogi, doesn't really matter. All of us want only one goal. What is that? We want knowledge. What is the knowledge? If I know, this is my mother. Now, automatically, I will be attracted to my mother. I want to sit on her lap. But now we do not know. We think this person is my mother, that person is my mother. Then we get kicks. I saw a beautiful documentary. You know, this wild beast, they all give birth at a particular season when the grass is abundant, usually in the spring season. It's a beautiful documentary. Now, half a million wild geese. They are all giving birth. So what happens when some danger comes? They are all running. Within a few minutes, the cows must get up and then run, keep pace with their
mother,
only mother. Now some poor fellows, it has lost its mother. The mother, for some reason, it got separated. Like, you know, when some cars are following you, you get separated, you get, calf gets separated. And then, the poor fellow, it is hungry. Even now and then it has to drink milk. So it is going to some other mother and it is giving it tea. Because it has its own calf and it is going to some other mother and it is giving a kick. Like that, this poor fellow was, then it was crying. But among all those thousands and thousands of wild beasts, the mother hears the cry and it comes running back. Oh, you must see, when mother and calf are rejoined, what joy is there on the face of the calf as well as even more on the mother. I have seen, when a lion or tiger attacks, the mother in danger herself, she is trying to defend her calf, standing in front of the calf. Yadehi sarvabhuteshu matri rupena samsthita. Oh, if you don't observe these things, then we are really blind. Anyway, what is the point we are saying? When we have knowledge, we recognize, this is my real father and mother. Pita me, mata me, Parvati devi, pita devo, Maheshwara, bandhavaha, shiva bhaktas, swadesho, bhavanatraya. This is our goal. The whole universe is nothing but manifestation of God. So that is the finest chisel by which we get knowledge. These are all implements. But finally we get the knowledge, self-knowledge. According to Jnani, self-knowledge means I am the divinity. According to Ramanuja, self-knowledge means I am part of the divine. I am a child of the divine. And according to Madhva also, I am a creation of the divine. Doesn't make any much difference how you, there is no difference really, because we are quarreling here, who is right and who is wrong. But in reality, if the end is the same. But what is important, whether you are a bhakta or anybody, knowledge. Until you get knowledge, you can never really have any real devotion towards God. It's only the knowledge which makes our devotion very firm. Until that time, we go on doubting, judging, criticizing God. Yeah, we find fault for everything, you know. So everything, Bhagavan, a fellow, poor fellow in India, has 10 children. You know?
Yeah.
That fellow says, Bhagavan, ye tumne ye kya kiya? The first fellow to be blamed is Bhagavan, ye tumne ye kya kiya? Jnana is the ultimate. Do not ever forget it, because bhaktas and jnanis seem to be quarreling. Oh, jnana marga is superior, bhakta says bhakti marga is superior. Neither the jnani knows, neither the bhakta knows what it is. They are quarreling about. We are only wanting one thing, that is knowledge. Without knowledge, we are completely blind. So how to get that knowledge? For that we have to acquire certain qualities. Those qualities in Bhakti Yoga, they are 35, nearly 35. And here there are some qualities. Very, very briefly I will go through these things. If you have got the text, let us start with the 7th shloka. Let us chant. Amanitva madambhitvam ahimsa kshavanti rajyavam acharyopasanam shaucham sthairyam atma vinigraha indriyardheshu vairagyam anahankara evacha Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anudarshanam asakti ranabhishvangaha putra dhara krihadishu nityam cha samachittatvam ishta nishtopapattishu maicha nanya yogena bhakti ravya vicharini iritta desha sevitvam Aratirjana samsadi adhyatma jnana nityatvam tatva jnanartha darshanam etat jnanam iti proktam ajnanam yadatunyatha. So many qualities, I will just read out the translation. Humility, unpretentiousness, non-injury, forbearance, uprightness, service to the teacher, purity, steadiness, self-control, the renunciation of sense objects and absence of egoism, reflection on the evils of birth, death, old age, sickness and pain, non-attachment, non-identification of self with son, wife, home and the rest, and constant even-mindedness in the occurrence of the desirable and the undesirable, unswerving devotion to me by the yoga of non-separation, resort to sequestered places, distaste for the society of men, constant application to spiritual knowledge, understanding of the end of true knowledge, this is declared to be knowledge, and what is opposed to it is
ignorance.
These are the qualities we have to develop. Now I will only just very briefly go, because many, when we were discussing other chapters, and these qualities are repeated. So in Bhakti Yoga, 12th chapter, 35 qualities. Every time he is repeating, so that we should cultivate these things in different words. Again in the 16th chapter, Daivasana Sampad Vihara Yoga, again all these qualities are coming. Now, Amanitva means one should not feel proud. Manitva, you know, Abhiman Bolena, Abhiman, Mana, respect to oneself. Abhimana means unnecessary pride, unwarranted pride. And interestingly, pride is of two types, righteous pride, unrighteous pride. What is righteous pride? A person is really a great scholar. He knows he is a scholar and he feels proud. I am a great scholar. He should not have that pride, but he has at least a cause, a reason for being proud. There are fellows who don't and they want to shine as the greatest scholars. That is the worst type of thing. Yeah, there are people who have real talents and they are proud. And at least, you know, there is some justification. Yeah. You know, Bangalore is a very famous place for singing. My Purushottaman be paying so many people, including me also a little bit. Yeah. So, there are some devotees who learn a little bit and want an opportunity to sing. And without his permission, no one can sing. So he used to say, we will definitely give you a chance to sing. Sometimes, occasionally, you know, the prasada falls short of the devotees. At that time, we will allow you to sing.
He understood
it after 1 minute. Took him some time to understand. So, it's a beautiful Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's creation. Sikshastakam.
Yes.
8 verses of spiritual instructions. Then he says, a beautiful, who is fit to take the name of God? Amatrina dapi sunichena. Amanina manadena. What is that? Kirtaniyo sada harihi. Hari's name is to be sung. By whom? Trinadapi sunichena. Taroriva sahishnuna. Amanina manadena. Kirtaniya sadahari. Simply you can't take God's name. You can take. But it won't yield much result. But in whom these qualities are present? What is that? Amanina. He doesn't feel, a person who doesn't feel egotistic or proud, but manadena, he gives great reverence to everybody else. He thinks he is the lowest, but he gives respect to everybody. Nagamasa, it is not false respect. It is, he sees God, manifestation of superiority, not simply other things, singing or writing or other things. He sees more manifestation of God. You have more good qualities than me. Trinadapi sunichen. And he feels humbler than a blade of
grass.
So, Trinadapi. Taroriva sahishnuna. Taruhu means vriksha, tree. You know, you go on beating it, trying, stripping it of its leaves, bark, etc. You see so many trees. And yet, it just goes on bearing and trying to protect. It's a beautiful verse. He says that there's a huge tree and it is spreading its leaves. A fellow is cutting down that tree. He is getting tired, but he is getting the shade and cool breeze because the tree is protecting him who is
cutting
it. So that is why it is said, Taro Riva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniyaha Sada Harihi. See what a wonderful classification. So that is the type of pride is terrible obstruction to us. So it doesn't mean that we should not, we should neglect ourselves, we should develop inferiority complex. No. It means to recognize everyone is a child of God and everyone has something which I do not have. If I have something, it is my greatness is not there. It is only because of this God's grace. If He can give, He can also take away. Any example comes to your mind?
Trilok? No.
Totapuri himself. Mother gave him nirvikalpa samadhi. And mother also has taken it away. He couldn't meditate. The man who could go into samadhi had absolutely no capacity. Thakur also is an example. Oh, once pride entered into him. I conquered kama. You know, after 2-3 days, he found himself in the Panchavati. He said, if I had seen even an old woman, I would have dragged her down. Thakur's words. You may say, oh Thakur, can it happen? Yes, it is. He himself said that. So don't blame me. Thakur himself says that. Why did he have it after realization? We are not talking about before realization. After realization, after all this. Why? Because he has to learn practically what we suffer from and how he can help us. Swami Vivekananda, he was overcome by lust. You know, he went and sat tava mele, he sat down on a burning pan. And he said it took many, many days. They were great souls. But you should not forget they never had these feelings. Because body will have these feelings. If he can eat, why can't he feel this feeling also? Then what is their greatness? Their greatness is they completely overcome and their mind is always on the highest plane. There is no doubt about it. So after that, Thakur said, Mother, I will never, never, ever again feel proud because you give and you take away. Anything, great. Kalidasa, before, what was he?
Murkha.
Not robber, Murkha. Ratnakara. Ratnakara was a robber. What a beautiful name. Bangladesh bole na, Terachuk Poddalochi. Squint eyes, lotus eyes. Name, Ratnakara. He has become a robber. Ratnakara. Yeah. Dhaneshwari, you have a lot of money? Yeah, Narayana, you know? Narayana's wife. Lakshmi, Lakshmi Devi herself. So she can tap whenever we want. If we want to build a beautiful temple, we can tap. Narayana is useless. Don't tap him. Don't be Lakshmi. Yeah. No, we are not going to do it. She can come. We are only thinking about it, you know. So, Kalidasa was completely an idiot type of person. But by the grace of Mother, Divine Mother, he became Srinivasa Ramanujan, the greatest mathematician in the world. Because of Devi's anugraha, he became such a great mathematician. Swami Vivekananda, what was his experience when he went to Vaishnava Devi? He said, oh, if only I had been there, I would have protected you with my life's blood. Vaishnava Devi, Muslims raised the temple to the ground. Then he heard a voice, is it you who protect me or is it I who protect you? He said, thank you, Mother. And then he came back. And then after that he wrote Kali the Mother. Tremendous experience he had. Every shaking step destroys a world for air. You know? So it is all divine grace. That's why Yadyad Vibhuti Matsatvam Srimad Urjitam Evava Tatta Deva Avagachatvam Mamai Vamsha Sambhavam. Wherever you see any excellency in anything, any person, any field, any object, no But it is my manifestation. That's why no one should treat gold with or touch it with their feet. It is an offense to the Divine Mother. She is manifesting. And nobody should touch the head of any creature with the legs, because that is showing disrespect to the Divine Mother. But she is manifesting that. What is the point we are discussing? That there is no cause for us to be proud, because someone is supplying us with this, and that someone also can stop the supply. Most of us are, an Indian government ration card with regard to our intelligence. Ration. In A tuku. Sometimes they stop also. You have to do a lot of magic to keep the supply. Okay, so that is one. It's one of the important things he says, kshantihi means forbearance. So many things happen in life. We have to develop. There is nothing we can do. Absolutely nothing. Excepting shutting our mouth and put up. That is the important thing. That's why Sri Ramakrishna's special teaching, every alphabet has got only one. But the word sha is three. Shajjikuro, shau. Otherwise, jeshoi, sheroi. This is the truth. Whether it is from the husband, from the wife, from the children, or from colleagues, from the world, what can you do? These beautiful hurricanes are coming one after the other. They love America so much. Used to post so much. After Irene, something else has come?
Bhutan.
Yes, it is battering.
Louisiana.
After that, something. Lee. I saw that news. Lee or something is battering now. Yeah, because they love him. They want to visit as many times as possible, as much as possible, with all their distant relatives also. Yeah, Ramana Maharshi used to say, when there is sickness, they were trying to, mulan put and then massaging put and then heating put and this put, and don't give EAP treatment. Because the disease thinks that I am being treated right royally. It doesn't want to be. Just be indifferent to it. Then it itself will go. So, kshanti. Then, acharya upasanam. In Hinduism, an acharya is given the highest place. Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Devo Maheshwara. The Guru doesn't get anything. But our attitude towards this, Guru is a target. We develop the highest reverence. When we develop reverence, this is an important point. When we are developing reverence, that reverence doesn't make any discrimination. If you revere Guru, then you will revere a child. Then you will revere everybody, then you will revere yourself. This is the most wonderful thing we can do, to worship ourselves. Not out of pride. When we worship ourselves, it prevents us from doing lower things. What? Coming from such a lineage, worthy lineage, how can I stoop to do such worthless things? Even if we feel like doing it, we would not allow ourselves to do it. So that is the advantage of our tracing our ancestry to some rishi or somebody. Otherwise, if we trace it to a robber king, and my great-grandfather did this thing, I will outdo him. That will be very bad. We have to be proud. We belong to which category? Whose lineage we are all belonging? Let us say, we are all sitting here. Whose lineage do you belong?
Narayana.
But immediately, we belong to Vivekananda, Holy Mother, Sri Ramakrishna. If you are initiated, you are going to get your Guru Sampradaya. Is it not?
Yes.
Then you get Thakur. Then you get Totapuri, get Shankaracharya, Govinda Bhagavatpada, Rudra Bhagavatpada, Shukadeva, Vyasadeva, Narayana, ultimately Parabrahma. This is our Guru Parampara. What a wonderful lineage we have. So we can never stoop to anything like that. That is the advantage of Acharya Upasana, means serving. He doesn't need your help, but you are doing it for your own purification and benefit. You know, I humorously call it, yesterday I told you, pulling the legs of Pranam. Pranam means what?
pulling
the legs of the Guru. Yeah, this is what most of the people try to do. And woe unto the teacher, if somebody is making pranam and he is looking at the other side, they will make sure that to look. Yes, some go to the extent of beating the feet of the Guru with their head.
Yeah.
Why? Because so long as the pain is there, the Guru remembers. Yes, somebody did that to Holy Mother. Yeah, there are many like that. Anyway, what is the point? Acharya Upasana. If we have reverence for the Acharya, we are learning reverence towards every object. Hindu custom. So we salute. Namo Narayana. Namaste we call. Or Namo Narayana. Or Darshan Safai. These are some of the special words. What is Darshan Safai? And two sadhus means
saaf
it is your vision clear. Darshan saaf hai. So this is the way, are we able to see God? That is the idea, reminding each other. Namo Narayanaya. Lord, even if they go for bhiksha, bhavati bhikshan dehi. These are wonderful things, even though we follow them mechanically. So Acharya Upasana is very important. Then there is one which is sthairyam. You know what is sthairyam? Steadfastness. What is steadfastness? It is whatever be the condition, I will not give up my habits, my practice. I'll just illustrate this with a story, then today we will stop this class. You know, this is the most marvelous traditional story. South India, the greatest Acharya, revered all over South India and much of North India, Ramanujacharya. Now this Ramanujacharya was a young Brahmin. What happened? He was there in Sri Ramana and he was the, what you call, the head of the whole Vaishnava sect, Guru. And every day he used to go to the temple and spend practically 5-6 hours, come back late at noon, then have his meals and other things. Now there was an old Brahmin, more than 80 years old. One day he recognized the greatness of Ramanujacharya and he went and said, please accept me as your disciple. And Ramanuja accepted. But with one condition, you should give me Guru Dakshina. He said, yes, whatever you ask me, I will give you. Then after he was initiated, you know, initiation means Om Namo Narayanaya, all this Urdhva Pundarika and all those things they will put. Then the disciple asked, so what is the Guru Dakshina you wanted? He said, Ramanuja said, every day, I will be returning at such and such a time from the temple. You will be sitting outside your, on the veranda of your house. I will come, I will wash your feet, I will drink that water, that is your Guru Dakshina. Guru is demanding from the guest. See, even though he was a disciple, but he was a senior in age. And that is the custom. He wanted his disciples to follow that marga, Holy Mother. How much devotion she used to bow down to priests, ordinary priests, even sometimes much younger than herself. you forget. So this man agreed, every day he will sit. Ramanujacharya would return on the way. This man's house was on the way. He will wash his feet, drink, salute and go away. Every day. This has gone for a long time. And one day, somehow, Ramanuja was preoccupied and he forgot. He went through some other way, reached home. Totally forgot about it. Then, at about midnight, remember, I told my disciple to stay there. I think he will be without food. Because he won't take food until Ramanujacharya comes, washes his feet, drinks, and then he is free. He will be sitting. Because he doesn't know what time Ramanujacharya will be returning. So, he will be sitting. Immediately, Ramanujacharya rushed to his home, found the old man was sitting patiently for the Guru to come. So immediately, Ramanujacharya washed his feet, drank, saluted and said, please pardon, and somehow I forgot. Then only the old man has gone there. This is called steadfastness. What a great teacher, you know, steadfastness. Now, you all know another greatest figure who is an embodiment of steadfastness. Who is that? Who is that? Shabari.
Oh.
How many years she waited? Steadfastly, you know. Is the gurus told her, when she was a young girl, the gurus told her, Rama will come to you, don't go anywhere, stay here, Rama will come to you one day. And what faith! From morning, she will get up, take bath, go and gather fruits, and wait, and wait, and wait. One day passed, 1 month passed, 1 year passed, nearly 90 years passed. She was so old, she was bent. She could not see properly. And yet, she never gave up hope. What is steadfastness? Not giving up hope in the words of the Guru or scripture. And she goes, gathers some fruits nearby and sits waiting. Rama will come. Oh, patati patatri, vichalita patri, pashyati tava panthanam. And then one day, Rama came. And that was the last day. Rama came. And she had some fruits. And of course, because of her poor eyesight, she did not know whether the fruits were sweet or not. So with tears rolling, she will bite a little bit. And that which she found a little bit sweeter, she will give to him. And he was also happily eating that one, because she was giving so much of love. And then after feeding Rama, he said, oh Lord, after beholding you, I do not wish to live any longer. And then with your permission, I will give up this one. And happily he says, and then he himself performed her. We don't get any indication whether he did it for his father or mother. We don't know. But he definitely did for Shabari. This is the greatest example of steadfastness. Steadfastness is possible only because of one quality. Before we could be steadfast, it must be supported on the platform of one quality. What is that quality?
Shraddha.
Absolute faith that this is good. It is true. What Guru said. What the scriptures say is absolute. This steadfastness is called sthairyam. Sthiratu, sthir. Sthirohoye bhusha. Sthairyatvam. That is the most important quality. How should we practice it? In our day-to-day life, you have guru or you have scripture and you take the teaching and do not ever doubt either yourself or the scripture or the Guru. Go on doing it, even if nothing happens, even if something negative happens, go on doing it. Another bright example of this is Gopalayamma. 33 years she did that. We will, in the evening class, we will discuss and wrap up this. The whole chapter, the essence I have given you. We are here to cultivate our mind. The mind is compared to a field, monade, vishikas, jnana. So we will discuss some and we will wrap it up. And now let us just chant Om Shanti
Shanti Shanti.
If you have any questions for a few minutes, or otherwise we can do some bhajan. Yeah.
Ramana Maharshi says animals, I mean he liberates some animals, right? But Ramana Maharshi liberates some, I mean cow or whatever.
Yeah.
Now Swamiji and Shankara, Adishankara. Adishankara says that, you know, for the, I mean, if you have to qualify for liberation, you need to renounce in your last birth, and that is possible for human beings.
Yes.
So how do we, you know, now
reconcile?
Vivekananda also says the same thing.
No, it is not difficult. So maybe like Jada Bharata, these people were sannyasins in the previous birth. Some obstruction had come, and in this life, through this birth, that obstruction is removed. They were ready for the knowledge, and they got the knowledge. That is their reconciliation.
So, are they, I mean, is that going to be the final birth? I mean, will they again get back after the animal birth? Will they go to human birth and
then get
liberation?
If a great soul like Ramana Maharshi or like Sri Ramakrishna gives liberation, the question of coming back doesn't arise. See, what is the purpose
so
of the
body? So it's an exception, you mean? I mean,
No. First of all, what is a body? It is a field. What is a mind? It is also a kshetra only. Many people have cultivated this, and there was a small obstruction. Before they could complete, their body had fallen. And for some reason, they had to go through karma, like Jada Bharata. But of course, he was reborn as a human being. But not necessary. One fun fact, as a devotee, is by God's grace, anything can happen. So, if God comes and says, I will give you liberation, and Shankaracharya will come and, no, he has to take a human birth, he has to renounce, he has to put on Kashaya Vastra, and then only you can give liberation. Can you say that?
So what you mean to say is, normal cases, that is the one, but if an incarnation gives, it can be for any animal.
You know,
can.
Shankaracharya did not say that is the condition for liberation. He said it will be facilitate spiritual sadhana. Otherwise, no householder has ever any chance of getting liberation.
Yes.
Then he has to either divorce,
okay,
or reborn and become a sannyasi. What about Nagamahashaya? What about Ramchandra Bhatta? What about Girish Chandra Bhatta? No, sannyasa belongs to the mind. There is nothing to do with it.
External is it not necessary to have external sannyasa? I mean, internally.
It is not necessary for liberation. Absolutely not necessary. What is necessary for liberation? What is the opposite of jnana? If a householder has jnana, what is the problem? Yes. Then Sri Ramakrishna is not only not incarnation of God, but he is not going to be liberated. Because he was a householder.
But he also renounced, right, Maharaj?
Yeah, he is in a very peculiar position, either a householder.
Yes.
He is sometimes behaving like a householder, and sometimes he is behaving like a sannyasi, whichever is convenient. Yeah. You know, there are some people in North India. There are some people in North India, 6 months they are householders, 6 months they are sannyasins. Yeah. I mean, sannyasin means what happened. The place where they are staying, they can only produce so much of harvest. It is sufficient only for 6 months. After that, in winter season, you know, nothing can grow. So 6 months they have got kashaya vastras there hanging. they will put on that one. For 6 months, they go on living sanyasi, sanyasi. And when the rainy season comes, they hang them there in the iti closet.
Actually, I was asking this question because Swami Vivekananda, in his talks with his disciple, he quotes Adi Shankaracharya and then says, yes, that is true.
No,
so,
you know, we have to understand why they do that. They do that because they want to encourage people, if it is possible, to become monks. It's not meant as a definite rule. For God's grace, there is no rule regulation. If His grace comes, that very moment, He can attain liberation. But they emphasize this because, that, you know, otherwise, it says there is no need to be sannyasi. So let us remain as householders. There is no rule regulation. We can have 5-6 children. There is no need to take God's name. It is said, you know, what is this of with indifferent mind sitting 5 hours. If I can take God's name once, that is very good. And Shankara, Shiva has given Sahasranama Tatulyam Rama Nama Varanamya. If you can repeat Ram, Hare Rama, Hare Rama once, that is equivalent to 1000 times repetitions. You just repeat it 10 times. How many times you are repeating? 10,000 times. And if that is also not enough for you, then you become a Buddhist. There is a wheel, and you just move that wheel, and it will move like 10,000 times per minute. And every time it moves, that is equivalent to 100 names of Manipadme Home written. 1,000 into 100, 1 lakh of times, you get the punya of repeating 1 lakh of times by just moving your forefinger. You understand what I am talking about?
Yes.
No. Swamiji wanted that to encourage people to respect sannyasa. That's important. But liberation comes only in one condition, Swami or no Swami. What is that? Jnana. If you get jnana, that is the only thing that can liberate. Whether you are a householder, sannyasi, young, old, animal, human, doesn't really matter. This is the truth.
One question. The Upanishads are meant only for the Advaita philosophy, or is that it has
no. Upanishads are the source books. They have been interpreted by Advaitins, by Vishishta Advaitins, and by Dvaitins. They have all the three philosophies are fully supported in every Upanishad. So there is no conflict. It is not three different types of interpretations according to Swami Vivekananda. The first step, Dvaita is the first step. Vishishta Dvaita is
second
step. And when you have progressed, finally you attain to that state of Advaita. So it is all the three are supported. Yeah. And they have not taken their philosophy from other than Upanishad. Any Indian philosophy must base itself upon only Upanishad, nothing else.
One more reconciliation in the books that we read. So Mahapurush Maharaj in, I think, First Seekers of God somewhere, he says, he is speaking to a woman who was earlier, you know, who was just blue with us. So he says, you know, offer everything at the feet of Thakur. Now we have taken his name. So now, I mean, live a, you know, strictly regulated life.
Hmm.
And then that is one thing. The second thing is, Thakur himself says in God's life that, you know, be careful what you're offering. Don't offer anything bad. Offer only good.
Hmm.
So now why is Mahapurush Maharaj saying, offer everything that you have done at the feet of Thakur and take his name? So,
you see, again, it is said in two different contexts. What is the context here? You see, will you offer anything bad to your own child? Whatever you think is bad, will you offer it to your child? Will you take it yourself? So how can you offer to God? You know, that is, we are wonderful, you know. patram pushpam phalam toy. God himself said. So offer one tulsi leaves to God. All rasagullas come to me. All tulsi leaves go to God. What is really meant is that you be cautious and offer your best. If you love God, you automatically offer to God what you think is the best, what you think. That is why Sri Kalahasti. What was that hunter offering to Lord Shiva? Only dried meat. Then the priest will come in the morning and he will clean all the bones and other things. Then you know, at the end, the Shiva appears and says, there is no need to quarrel. He thinks he likes that food. So he is offering what he thinks is the best for himself. If it is best for me also, and you think this is best, and that's why you are offering this to me. What is important is devotion, not what you offer. Yeah. You see, Durga Puja, Kali Puja, do lot of bali. So what is it you are offering? You are offering meat? Can you do that, you know, in your house? You will not do it. Now, if you want to offer, what will you offer here? First class idli sambar ali in the morning. You think Thakur will like it? He has to like. There is no other way. Otherwise, he won't get breakfast.
That is true.
There is no choice. He has to do without breakfast. No. See, it is not what we offer. It is the devotion that counts, the feeling that counts. This is the point. So what is Mahapurushmara telling? That good or bad? No. If you advance in devotion, what you call good and bad, everything belongs to whom? It's only God. So you are only offering what belongs to God already. So you are not doing anything bad. At that time you don't think this is good, this is bad. You just say, O Lord, I offer everything to you. I myself belong to you. That is the highest devotion. Until we reach that state, we have to be cautious because we are very discriminative what we eat and drink. So long as we are discriminative and selective, so long we have to be selective with regard to God also. When you reach such a state, you don't discriminate, this is good, this is bad. At that time, you have no such mind. Shall I give this, shall I not give this, and all those things. This is a story, you know. Krishna was invited by Duryodhana to have dinner. He came and received, when he went as an ambassador of peace. He refused, no, until I finish the work, I can't accept your food, otherwise my mind will be biased in your favor. Then he went to Vidura's house. And Vidura didn't see Krishna at the sabha. So he hurried home because he understood. What did he see? His wife was peeling bananas, throwing the banana in the basket and offering the peeling to Krishna. Happily he was eating. See, she was so devoted that she was not able to see what she was offering. Krishna also didn't see. Why can't he take? He will take. He can take. After all, he created, you know, his own karma phala. The law of karma applies even to him. Yeah, Shweta, you know that? God incarnate. You say, oh, how compassionate. What is the meaning of compassion? What compassion? You created this world, you clean up the mess. Understand? Yeah, karma, law of karma.
Yeah.
I have to incarnate, I have to come again. Yes, you have to come many times. After all, you created this mess, you are creating this mess again and again and again. That is why you have to come. It is not compassion, it is the law of karma. Who do you know? what I am saying is right. I am not saying anything out of my own production. I am quoting Thakur, you know, Pratap came the other day. He was married, he wanted to stay here. And then I scolded him, you fellow, you had wife and children, who is going to look after? You produce the children and your neighbors will look after them. Are you not ashamed? So you produce this world. Are you not ashamed?
Love you.